Welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Liz Crummel, and I'm glad to see you all here this morning. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. One thing, the UU Thinkers Chess Club is meeting today from 4 to 6 here, so please come. Also, there will be an informational meeting on Green Sanctuary at LCUC today after coffee at 11:45 in the middle school classroom. And just a note that the treble choir has started rehearsals and would welcome anyone else who wishes to join. We normally rehearse every week at 9:25 in the morning before church in the large classroom, but we'll not be having rehearsals the next 2 weeks, the 24th and 31st, but we'll resume our weekly rehearsals on the 7th of February. Please contact Morgan Moraine if you have any questions. And from our DRE, the high schoolers will stay in the service today. And next Sunday, the middle school RE class will be going to the Deer Park Buddhist Center near Madison. The group is leaving from our area at 8:30, and those interested in going along should talk to Carrie Duma. And lastly, dear community, the Haiti situation is on all of our minds and in all of our hearts. As a religious community, it is imperative that we respond. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, UUSC, has set up a special Haiti Relief Fund, which is accepting donations to provide aid to the people affected by this devastating earthquake. Therefore, with the endorsement of our Social Action Committee, our first response will be a special collection this coming Sunday, the 17th of January, and next Sunday, the 24th of January. So there will be a designated collection for the Hebron House. This is what we'd already established we'd collect for today. It's the Hebron House / St. Matthias drop-in shelter for the homeless in Waukesha. Please write shelter on your check or on the envelope if you would like your money to go there. And the check should be made out, though, to LCUUC. Secondly, designated checks for the UUSC Haiti Relief Fund. Please write UUSC Haiti on the envelope or check memo. Checks could be made out to LCUUC, or if you believe your company may match funds, you may want to write it out to UUSC and see about getting some matching funds from your corporation or company that you may work for. I invite you now to greet those seating around you. Sitting around you. If you are a visitor, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you're visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. And the nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there's a need for childcare during the service. If there are any visitors who are comfortable introducing themselves, now would be a good time so that we may warmly welcome you. Welcome. So everyone, I'm sorry. Welcome. So everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion about the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. And I hope you'll find this morning's service fulfilling. Our speaker today will be our own Reverend Jane Ebsenson. Reverend Jane!
Holy and beautiful, the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend, faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place. Please join now in singing the chalice lighting. It is a sung tradition in this church for this chalice lighting, and the words are in your order of service. Now going to have Sally Plaw read the story for all ages for the children. So all of you children, young and old, whatever age you and size you may be, are very welcome to come up to the front.
Hi, you guys. Can you hear me? Am I okay? Hey, you guys. Our story for today is called The Everything Seed. A story of beginnings. Have you ever watched a seed grow? Have you ever noticed how it begins so small? So still and so quiet, it's like a gift waiting to be opened. and how very slowly it wakes up. It begins to unfold and it grows into something larger and then larger and then larger. And then you know that whatever comes from a seed usually ends up looking very little like the seed it first came from a tiny pinprick to this big flower or tree or whatever it is. But you know, that is also true of the very first seed ever. Because once, long, long ago, way back before the beginning, so long ago, there was no such thing as time, because there was no one there to count it. Everywhere was a huge, deep, mysterious black place, like something waiting to happen. There were no stars, no sun, no moon, no place like Earth, not a drop of water, or a single tree, or rock, or flower, no living beings anywhere. But in that deep waiting space was hidden the tiniest point of something, no bigger than a seed. It was not a flower seed. It was not an elm tree seed. It was not a seed of corn, although all those things were included in the seed. How can that be? You might call it an everything seed, because that is what it became. No one knows where that first seed came from, or how it was planted, or how it knew, in the way that only seeds seem to know, how long to wait for just the right moment to sprout and grow. But all at once, this tiny seed, cradled and nourished in the rich soil of space, woke up, broke open, and began to unfold. Unfolding, unfolding, and blossoming forth into an enormous blazing ball of great bright light. Like a great grandmother sun. And the universe was born. Out fluttered the galaxies like a storm of snowflakes, swirling and gathering into the brightest, most blindingly beautiful cloud of stars. And out of those star clouds whirled our own star, the one we call the sun, and our Earth, and the moon, and all the round spinning planets we have learned how to name. And this is the secret of that tiny seed. You and I were there in the very beginning. Just as the idea for each leaf on a big oak tree lies hidden inside the tiniest acorn. We were there with all the stars and planets, all the rocks and oceans, plants and animals and people, everything that is now, ever was, or ever will be, was inside that first tiny seed. So, whenever you hold a seed in your hand and you wonder what it could become, imagine how you and all that is here once came from the tiniest speck of an everything seed before it sprouted and grew long, long ago in the way back beginning of time. And now, if this were an ordinary story, it would end right here. But this story of the universe keeps unfolding. What once began in a blazing blossom of light continues every day. New stars sprout open in the deep soil of space. New plants and animals appear on the earth. Seeds of many kinds are scattered all over the earth to help us remember. And new people are born every day with the spark of that first light still alive and burning deep inside and waiting. Waiting like the everything seed to shine in ways that are yet to be known. Isn't it amazing when you see a little seed, there's no way to tell what it can become. And it's the same with each of us. There's no way to tell what we will become, but we have a choice. How are we going to grow? It's a little bit up to us too, isn't it? Thank you guys, you've been really good.
We're now going to sing the first hymn for the morning. It is number 40 in your gray hymnals, and it's "The Morning Hangs a Signal." And please stand as you are able. Now in the service for the offertory, and as was noted in the announcements, today we have the designated collection, which is for the Hebron House in St. Matthias, which is the drop-in shelter in Waukesha County, I believe. I'm new to this area, so I'm not really sure, but I believe it's in Waukesha County. Obviously it's in Waukesha County, but I'm not sure if it's in Milwaukee or Waukesha County. And so if you are going to be writing a check for that, you or on the envelope, just write shelter. But also, of course, we cannot ignore the situation in Haiti. And so our church, along with all other churches, I'm sure, in the entire world, are responding to this need. But the Unitarian Universalist Association has something called the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, and they have set up a special Haiti Relief Fund. So you can write your checks to the LCUUC or to UUSC, and also put that on the envelope if you're donating money to that cause. And that's the very, very, very most minimum thing that we can do. But hopefully there's something greater that we can also attend to in the future, in the near future. Today our service is going to be on heretics, and I have requested of some of the high school children, or students and young adult people, to give their own thoughts on heretics, and I have no idea actually who these individuals are going to be. I have let them choose themselves. I have let them choose their own examples. I have simply opened it up to them. So first of all, because this is going to be separated into two different readings for this service, I need to know, just for some practicality purposes, how many of you brave souls are there? One, two. There were four last Sunday. Okay, so we'll start with, since there's two reading times, we'll start with one of you. So, Morgan, why don't you come on up?
Yes. Okay. I'm here reading this for Greg Duma, who couldn't be here today. So,
he knew in advance he wasn't going to be here.
Yes, that's why it's printed. In many of the famous Dan Brown history-based suspense novels, the battle between science and religion is described as a battle with both sides unable or unwilling to accept the other side. This battle has been led to the creation of the outcasts of religion, the scientific heretics, of all of those who were defined as heretics. Probably two of the greatest were Galileo Galilei and Charles Darwin. A physicist, mathematician, and astronomer, Galileo, led one of the greatest revolutions in science the world has ever known. Galileo came up with a theory of heliocentric solar system, where all of the planets rotated around the sun instead of the Earth. This seemingly basic scientific discovery was met by the firm resolve of the Christian Church, who were believers in a geocentric or Earth-centered solar system. The Church denounced Galileo as a heretic and placed him under house arrest. The stubborn refusal to accept and incorporate new ideas into a static, concrete religion led to the eventual demise of one of the greatest minds the world has ever known. The other great scientific heretic was Charles Darwin, the creator of modern-day evolutionary theory. Again, the Church believed that all creatures were stagnant in their development, captured in the pure, absolute forms in which God made them at the beginning of time. Darwin shattered this reality by introducing a study of finches in the Galapagos Islands. Though through rather clever deduction, Darwin began to unearth a theory that would cover the grand scale of life across the globe, from the smallest bacterium to the largest whale, all things were constantly adapting to their environment and evolving to better, more suitable forms. Again, the status quo was challenged and pushed to the limits, and again, the static, concrete power of church law and dogma held fast. Any and all humans who are willing to think beyond the ordinary are heretics in their own way. When we challenge the everyday perceptions of the world around us, we are heretics. It is said that the default position to all scientific research is skepticism, and with this doubt, all new science that pushes the boundaries of knowledge is heresy. These two examples are simply the grandiose, romanticized heretics of the world. But in the end, there are mighty few who can go off of faith alone. And doesn't that make us make all the rest of us heretics?
Thank you to Greg in absentia. And thank you, Morgan, for reading that. Jesse, you next one. I would have if there were four of you. Thank you. We'll now have joys and concerns, and Sally Pla will be responsible for that part of the service.
This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns with each other. First, I'll light a candle to commemorate the victims of violence around the world, and especially the people in Haiti. Our thoughts are with them, especially this Sunday. If you wish to share, please stand and our ushers will bring a mic to you and I will light a candle for your joy or concern. Thanks.
It's the 6th month anniversary of my husband's death. And I would like a candle of joy for the years that I had with him.
Could you light a candle of concern for several of my friends who have left for the naval base and the marine base out in California this past week?
My name is Dave, and I led a group of us who volunteered to help the outreach meal in Waukesha, downtown Waukesha's Hope Center, formerly called CCWC. Anyway, the Hope Center outreach meal, it was wonderful that we were all there to help out. But a candle, please, of concern for those people who do not have a home to go back to every night and rely on those types of services for their basic needs.
My name's Joanne, and a candle of joy and concern for a dear friend who is resigning her secure work position tomorrow and starting off on her own business.
My name is Gina. One candle will do for two dear friends that we lost this last week, Steve Carpenter to ALS and Cal Quincy to a sudden heart attack, and he leaves behind. Steve leaves two college-age kids, and Cal leaves three middle schoolers. So a tough road ahead for their families.
I'll light one more candle for the joys and concerns that we keep in our hearts. And please remember also that Jean is here for any of us that wish to share privately. Thanks.
I invite you now to enter into a moment of silence, prayer, and reflection. And I will lead you into that with some words. Earth, teach me stillness as the grasses are stilled with light. Earth, teach me suffering as old stones suffer with memory. Earth, teach me caring as parents who secure their young. Earth, teach me courage as the tree which stands all alone. Earth, teach me limitation as the ant which crawls on the ground. Earth, teach me freedom as the eagle which soars in the sky. Earth, teach me resignation as the leaves which die in the fall. Earth, teach me regeneration as the seed which rises in the spring. Earth, teach me to forget myself as melted snow forgets its life, and remember kindness as dry fields weep with rain. May it be so. Please remain seated and join in the centering hymn number 169, We Shall Overcome. All right, now we're ready for that second reading.
Hi, I'm Jesse Duma, and my brother kind of stole my thunder because I was going to talk about Darwin too. So I'll just jump over the history part and right into my ideas. So, you know, Darwin developed the theory of evolution. And in evolution, there is one individual who breaks away from the rest of the stream and develops a different trait or something to solve a problem or overcome an obstacle in the environment. And that's how the species evolves. As more more individuals develop this trait, the species evolves and it overcomes these obstacles and keeps going. And I was thinking about this while I was writing about heretics, and it came to me that heretics are how our society and how our race evolves intellectually as a society, because heretics deviate from the norm. And in doing so, they create new ideas, just like Darwin created this theory of evolution that revolutionized our science. He created this new subset and this new idea of how to solve these problems or these questions that humans have had since the beginning of time. Where did we come from? How did we get here? What is our purpose in life? And so through heretics like Darwin, we develop, or through heretics like Gandhi, who develop this peaceful protest, and he revolutionized the way we see conflict resolution throughout the world. And through heretics, I think we develop as a species, as through people who challenge the status quo. And often it's difficult. It's difficult to stand out. Like you can see right now, I'm shaking, just standing out in front of you guys, the very accepting church. So it's difficult. It is often difficult for heretics like Darwin, you know, his theory is still being torn apart by people. And Gandhi, you know, suffered through great controversy and great adversary in his work. But it is through these people who choose to stand out and take this step that we develop and grow as a species. So that's my part. Thanks.
Yay.
Hi. I wrote something about Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr. was born in Atlanta, Georgia on January 15th, 1929. So if he was still alive today, he would have turned 81 2 days ago. He was the son of a minister, and he had an older sister and would soon have a younger brother. He grew up and went to school in Atlanta. He dropped out of high school at the age of 15 and went straight to college. He was in college for 7 years, and in that time he got a Bachelor of Arts degree in Sociology, a Bachelor of Divinity degree, and a Doctor of Philosophy. You may wonder why I'm saying all this, because it doesn't have anything to do with why he was a heretic. And I was wondering why I was writing about his early life too. I think the reason I was writing about his early life is because it could be any of us. We could all drop out of high school and decide to go to college early, be in college for a really long time and learn a bunch of stuff, become ministers. And we can all make a difference in our world. And he was a major leader in the fight against segregation, and he changed the whole nation, and he really helped people, and any of us could do that. We could all stand up for our beliefs and make a difference. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for those readings and your thoughts. My talk today is called O Flame Burning Bright, Heretics Remembered. And the reason I wanted to do that was because this chalice is lit every single Sunday here. And I've spoken to a few people who didn't really know what that had to do with. Why do we light this chalice? Some people were thinking that it's really about the light of way, the way of the world and our light out into the world and the things that we hope and believe and the things that we think are true and that we are beacons. And certainly an aspect of that is true. And we light this chalice in the morning and then we take a little spark of that and we put it into this candle in this wonderful little glass torch. And a child comes up and takes that torch, that lit flame, and walks out, and all of the children rise and follow this light out. And every Sunday that makes me cry, because it's so beautifully symbolic that it is the children who are going to be the carers, the bearers of this light, of this tradition for us out into the world. And we don't just talk about that, but we have physical evidence of it when they walk out of this room. So that's the beauty of this chalice. But this chalice actually has a much more, a greater, more profound, more powerful and challenging meaning to us. And that is in remembrance of all of the people, the heretics of our past and our present and our future, who have literally been killed for standing up for what they believed, for standing outside of society, for standing outside of the norm, for challenging the status quo, for daring to be different and to speak. And so when we light this chalice, we're actually lighting a remembrance of death, and how easy it will be for, could be for any one of us to be killed for what we believe. Because we are in this nation of conservative Christianity, which is not Christianity. It is an aspect of it, which is very threatened by us who look at the world and speak differently. And we are now in wars with people who are different from us. And we are being told that those are very frightening and dangerous people and they must be killed. So this flame is in memory of all of those who are different from me. And different from all of you. I came upon this book as I was going to be doing some research for this talk today. And last week I spoke about the perception of reality. And I came upon a book on heretics called The Crimes of Perception, which I thought was very interesting. I want to read a little bit out of this book. It's called An Encyclopedia of Heresies and Heretics, Crimes of Perception, by a psychologist whose name is Leonard George. And I'll just read some words. I could have read the entire introduction of this book because it's so beautifully written. But I'll just pull out some things. The word heresy derives from a classical Greek word, heresis. And originally, heresis simply meant a belief chosen by an individual or sect. No negative value was attached to the term. The first century Jewish historian Josephus, for example, described the various schools of Hebrew thought prevalent at the time, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the Essenes, and the Zealots, as types of heresis. The early Christians even used the word to refer to themselves. In the New Testament's book of Acts, the Christians are called the heresies of the Nazarenes, an interesting fact usually camouflaged by the standard English translation of this passage, which simply says it is the sect of the Nazarenes. Even at this early date, however, some Christians were beginning to condemn those who chose religious views differing from their own. In Paul's letters to the Galatians, he includes heresy in a list of works of the flesh, along with such items as uncleanliness, murder, idolatry, hatred, and drunkenness. And in the second letter of Peter, the author proclaims that there shall be false teachers among you who privily shall bring in damnable heresies. Heresies or heresy was coming to mean a false choice, one that endangers the salvation of the soul. But who can determine the correctness of a choice about the nature of reality? Only those who believe that they have already made the correct selection would presume to own the yardstick of truth. If, in addition, they have the means to persuade young children and dissenters to agree with them, these possessors of truth can establish themselves as an orthodoxy, a mainstream reality tradition, also frequently known as common sense. Reality is usually defined by those with the best weapons. Techniques of influence vary from relatively gentle peer pressure to visits to the torture chambers, which are still busily operating in most of the United Nations countries. Through the centuries, the following formula has been endlessly repeated. I have the truth, and you do not. My proximity to the truth entitles me to oppress you, to force you to say and do things in which you do not believe, to imprison and mutilate you, to take your belongings, to make you accuse others of wrong views, and even to execute you for your own good. And then he goes on to say, I offer the following definition to identify heresy in the broadest sense. A heresy is a crime of perception, an act of seeing something that, according to some custodian of reality, is not truly there. Heresy, therefore, is always relative to an orthodoxy. Every tradition has its heresies. An institutionalized belief system, like a cornered bear, will attack if it perceives a threat to its existence. This defensive maneuver may succeed and the danger will end. However, it may fail and the orthodoxy will be replaced. The latter outcome is more likely if the orthodox forces fail to identify correctly the true source of the threat. If a variety of heresies exist, the defenders of outmoded worldviews will have more difficulty deciding which ones are the most dangerous, and will more likely fail to detect the seeds of destruction until they have already sprouted. By then, it may be too late. In this manner, an abundance of heresies helps to disarm and dispose of worn-out ideas, clearing the way for the emergence of the new. The Reverend John Corrado wrote in a sermon he entitled, So Great a Cloud of Witness, what it means to be a heretic and who are the heretics in our Unitarian Universalist history. Each of us this morning, he writes, is partaking in something that is not only special but exceedingly rare in the entire cavalcade of human history. As we sit here in our Unitarian Church, we are in a free country, freely choosing whether or where we worship. Our choice is to worship in a free church. For most of the people who have inhabited the planet, such freedom has been unimaginable. Yet we have it, enjoy it, and sadly often take it for granted, trivialize it, or piddle it away. Many people act as if religious freedom were nothing and treat it as though it were unimportant. The faith of the free becomes just a bunch of vacuous words, and that's what I'd like to talk with you about this morning. Faith isn't free. Our freedom is an inheritance. We are reminded of this every Sunday morning. An inheritance. We didn't invent it. We didn't earn it. We didn't do anything to deserve it. It is an inheritance, a gift, and it is a gift which has been paid for in blood. As far as religious freedom is concerned, I have come upon more than a few people in the Unitarian Universalist movement who have a very limited and cheap sense of what they have inherited, or since this is their chosen church, what they have chosen to inherit. I have come upon more than a few people who interpret freedom to mean a church free from tradition, free from history, free from anything religious, whatever they may mean by that, and even free from the name church. When I was hired here, I was actually surprised that this Unitarian congregation called this building a church, and that this talk that a person gives on Sunday morning was referred to as a sermon. More often than not, in Unitarian Universalist circles, unless they are of a predominantly Christian ilk or a God-centered building, they refer to the sermon as an address, and they refer to their building as either a fellowship or a society or simply a house. And so when I came here, I was assuming that this would be a more or predominantly Christian-oriented or God-theistically oriented congregation, predominantly, not that there isn't a diversity always. And as a humanist minister myself, I was wondering how I would fit in, whether I would be seen as a heretic. When I was studying to be a Unitarian minister, I was warned very sternly and strongly and often not to say that I was a humanist, or there would be no congregation that would ever hire me. And I stand before you today. I was also told not to ever engage in any talkbacks, because that's a very dangerous thing. People in Unitarian churches want a non-church church. Yet they come into our doors, I must assume, because they've heard we are the Church of the Free. And they are disappointed to find that we are not the Burger King non-church. The Burger King jingle goes, "Hold the pickle, hold the lettuce, have it your way at Burger King." Let me tell you about someone I met at church, one of the congregations I served decades ago. I will call him Jim. I met Jim during the salad days of my ministry, when I was green and a little tender. A slightly more experienced and sly minister from the neighboring UU church had sent Jim to our church. "They're more open there," he said. "Oh, thanks a lot," I told him. Jim was tall of stature, loud of voice, and forceful of personality. These traits might have made him short of friends, except for the fact that he kept volunteering to take charge of things. With enough people long on fatigue and short on discernment, the church found Jim leading a program he called a retreat on what we believe. The whole process was something I had trouble believing, especially when, in Burger King non-church fashion, he declared that whoever happened to attend his shindig would determine what the beliefs of the church were, because, as he delicately put it, our church is whatever we say it is. This is when I became short of patience, firm of conviction, and in his face. Think of it. The church is whatever we say it is, as if the church existed in a vacuum with no past, no tradition, no heritage, as if it were a tumbleweed dropped from outer space. Jim's not alone. Hang around a liberal church long enough and you will run into a few people like Jim, people who are confused about religious freedom. Unitarian Universalist churches are not the only churches of freedom. Unitarian Universalist churches are, however, among the very few churches which have no creed to serve as a corrective for any abuses of freedom that may occur. We rely on the good faith of people, the dialogue with one another, the dissension that we might hear, with the accrued tradition of our faith to be the corrected trivialization, narcissism, and any other abuses of freedom. But you have to know that you are accepting an inheritance when you walk in these doors. You need to learn, remember, and incorporate your history, or at least some of it. If you want to measure your faith, I suggest this. Don't measure it against the trends of the day. With all of your reason and the best that is in your soul, measure it against the accrued wisdom, history, and sacrifice. Sacrifice of the past. This enlightened freedom we now enjoy was paid for by a great cloud of witnesses. It would do us well to act as if their eyes looked down upon us and upon what we do with the gift that they have bestowed us. Let me remind you a few of those witnesses. Jan Hus, a symbol Unitarian Universalists have appropriated since shortly after they merged 40 plus years ago, is the flaming chalice. Do you know the roots of that symbol? When people in our churches around the world light the chalice on Sunday mornings, they inherently recall the witness of Jan Hus. Hus was not a Unitarian, but he was one of the devout questioners who was a part of the liberal religious heritage which we have inherited. Hus was born over 600 years ago. He was ordained to the Roman Catholic priesthood in the year 1401, more than 100 years before the start of the Reformation. Things we take for granted today were part of the Bill of Particulars, which led to the hierarchy of the Roman Church to label Jan Hus a heretic. Hus not only preached in Czech, his native language, rather than in Latin, as was the norm. He preached of native matters, common everyday concerns, and he spoke in a language which everybody could understand. He believed in religion for all people. He preached out of the shared experience of the people rather than preaching theology. As Hus once said, if God had intended himself to be revealed through theology, we would have all been born with doctorates. Hus also believed in what Unitarians later called salvation by character, that goodness is shown in a person's actions rather than in what she or he professes to believe. Hus also taught that communion bread and wine did not change into body and blood, but were merely symbolic. To make matters worse, he taught that this sacrament of fellowship should be put in the hands of all people. He believed in the fellowship and religious equality of all believers. For this, he was arrested. His priestly robes were torn from his body, and he was burned at the stake. The flame. But to burn a man is not to stop a truth. Hus's followers identified themselves with badges and drawings of the flaming chalice. Out of the ashes of post-World War II Europe, Unitarians all over the world reclaimed that symbol of religious freedom. In the words of Jan Hus, God needs people who will seek the truth, listen to the truth, teach the truth, love the truth, abide by the truth, and defend the truth, even unto death. That's what he said, and that's what he did. It doesn't sound like a Burger King, believe it, believe whatever you want, non-church. And then we have in our history, Unitarian Universalist history, Michael Servetus. Michael Servetus was born in Spain in 1511, and he is known to some as the first Unitarian. Like Hus and the other church reformers of those earlier times, Servetus was not a go-with-your-feelings Luke kick, that Star Wars religion. Servetus was a learned man, a scholar, and a physician. He studied religion seriously before he critiqued it. How many of us do that in our times? To think for ourselves, to see if it makes sense. He found no biblical basis for either the belief in the Trinity or that Jesus was God. He wrote about this in his book, On the Errors of the Trinity. Servetus not only challenged the Pope, he challenged the other religious reformers of the day. His writings circulated through much of Europe in the 1530s. Since he was sought by Catholics and Protestants alike for his challenging views, Servetus himself circulated much of Europe too, hoping to live and press on another day. And he was finally captured by John Calvin. Like Hus, Servetus was also burned at the stake. His books were tied around his body. His body was tied to a stake. And then he was burned alive. I wonder how seriously Servetus would take Dance to Your Own Inner God, Goddess Under the Full Moon concept. Freedom isn't free. Disciplined religious open-mindedness doesn't mean your mind is so open that your brains fall out. It is often compelling in our hard life to long to lean up against something, and people can understand why religions like that make sense. To lean up against something, know that you're not alone, and that somehow there's wisdom, a greater wisdom than you know. We don't have that luxury in this church. We can lean up against each other, and we actually see each other to do that. What's around us beyond that, we don't know. And that takes a lot of courage and faith and trust. But we're here. The third person is Francis David. David is certainly one of the greatest of the witnesses for free religion. High on a hill above the town of Deva, Romania, lies an old castle. Were you to climb the dusty road to the castle and brave the trees and vines that have grown around it, you could look down upon the town and sense the might and power that castle represented to the people of Transylvania 400 years ago. If you go into the castle, you will discover not Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory, but something greater. In one of the towers, by the entrance to a prison cell, you would see these words, "Here died the martyr, Francis David, the reformer of immortal souls, the founder and bishop of the Unitarian Church." Carl Scoville, a Unitarian minister, writes, "All he did in 5 years was establish a Unitarian church, a national church which, proportional to the size of the national population, is 5 times the size of the American church. A church which for over half of its existence has endured persecution most of us would find hard to believe." That's a pretty good 5-year input. But there's more to it than that. In the 1560s, 4 competing religious groups fought for dominance in Transylvania: Catholic, Lutheran, Reformed, and Unitarian. It was up to the king, Jan Sigismund, to decide which church would be the official state church. To this end, the king sponsored a series of debates to be held throughout the country, and Francis David represented the Unitarians. Had David merely won the debates and established the primacy of the Unitarian church, we could have saluted the eloquence of him and said, "Hooray for our side." But David was not on our side. When the Catholic debater said, "If I win the debate, I will have your head on a plate," David said, If I win the debate, there will be religious tolerance for all. And that's what happened. In 1557, an edict of religious toleration was issued. I'll say that year again. 1557. An edict of religious toleration. The first such declaration in Western history. This due to the efforts and eloquence of Francis David. Unfortunately, religious liberty was short-lived. King John Sigismund died in 1571, and his successor removed all Unitarians from public office and severely restricted the practice of the faith. David persevered despite this, and in 1579 was thrown into a cell in the castle at Deva, where he died. Freedom is not free. These words were discovered scratched on the walls of his cell. Not lightning, nor cross, nor sword of the Pope, nor death's visiblest face, nor power whatever can stay the progress of truth. What I have felt, I have written. With faithful heart, I have spoken. After my death, the dogmas of untruth shall fall. The continuing presence of those who would impose a religious dogma on the rest of us attests to the fact that the battle is not over. Did David die for the trend du jour or undiscerning eclecticism? Anything goes? I doubt it. I also doubt that he died for religious political correctness or for people who would turn their favorite political agenda into a test of faith for everyone in their church. And I can't see such martyrdom as an affirmation of those who, while they call themselves universalists and Unitarians, not only wish to divide us up into little tiny identity groups, but through some magic I don't understand, do it on the denominational level. Don't call yourself a humanist, Jane. You'll never get hired as a minister to serve a congregation. Don't speak about God in the sanctuary. People aren't going to like that. Don't say you're an atheist. It's very scary. Don't say you're agnostic because that sounds really wishy-washy. Don't say you're a Wiccan because, oh my gosh. Norbert Coppock is another name I want to say. I want to mention this other great witness for religious freedom. His name, Norbert Coppock, is a 20th century martyr. Some of you may remember Coppock for the institution of the Flower Communion, which I believe this congregation celebrates. It is a rite which celebrates the beauty of diversity within unity. And like Hus, Coppock was Czechoslovakian. Like Hus, Coppock spoke to the aspirations and needs of his people. He was a champion of religious and political freedom. In the 1930s, he built a church of over 5,000 members in Prague and started churches in five other Czech cities. The freedom of Coppock's body ended in 1941 when Hitler's SS troops took him into custody. The freedom of his mind and soul continued to flourish, and even at the Dachau concentration camp, Coppock composed songs for himself and his fellow prisoners to sing. And in this way, Coppock gave hope to the prisoners, who later said they would have given up and probably would have perished if it had not been for him and for those songs. Coppock's free-spiritedness did not please his captors. They made him the subject of their medical experiments. And he died of the injections he had been given in October of 1942. There are those who believe that Unitarian Universalism is an easy religion, that religious freedom is vague and anything Arianism, which affirms everything and demands nothing, or that we are mainly interested in the trends or social agendas of the day. Tell that to Jan Hus. Tell that to Michael Servetus. Tell that to Francis David. Tell that to Norbert Kopek. They are a part of the great cloud of witnesses which hovers over every free church. They are among those whose positive beliefs kindle the light of free religions. They are among those who paid the ultimate price. I guess we'll always have the gyms in the world amongst us, those people who say Unitarian Universalism is whatever you want it to be, those who affirm everybody else's religious practices from ancient Hindu to modern secular Kwanzaa, while putting down the traditional aspects of their own religion, which they do little to learn about. I guess we'll always have the gyms who trivialize worship and the celebration of any rite from the blessing of a baby to the mourning of the dead, who whitewash any hymns which fail to meet the politically correct agenda of the day. I guess that's the price we pay for having a church that's free. And as annoying as you may all find that to be, and I certainly find it quite annoying and tedious, it's a small price to pay for freedom. It's certainly a small price when you consider the price that our great cloud of witnesses paid. If you want a yardstick to measure the length and breadth and depth of your faith, consider the great cloud of witnesses who represent the noblest part of a free religion. Our church is not a first century church or a fifth century church or a 16th or 19th century church. It is a 21st century church. It is a church in this time, but it is not merely a church of this time. It is not merely the church of what's happening today. What was said in the first century by the Apostle Paul remains relevant to us today. Be free in the best sense of the word. Remember where your freedom comes from and feel blessed. I want to end now with the final words of the introduction of this book. Crimes of perception. If you reflect on your own reactions as you consider the lives and thoughts of the heretics, you can harvest the greatest benefit, an enhanced awareness of the assumptions that make up your own worldview. Are you fascinated by the strange cosmologies of the ancient Gnostics? Are you moved by the medieval French Cathars, many of whom offered themselves to be burned alive rather than renounce their faith? Does the Holy Inquisition repulse you, intrigue you, or both? Does some part of you cheer for the false messiahs? What are the inner orthodoxies and heresies with which you define yourself and your universe? Read, learn, enjoy, reflect. And remember that possession of this sort of book that you hold in your hands would have brought you to a fiery death at the stake in the not so distant past. Just owning this book, from the vantage point of history, one can glean no assurance that the burning times will never return. Keep one eye on the door and remember our flaming chalice. Thank you.
Her to know if she was famous, but she wrote this song is about a man she knew who was perhaps one of the great heretics of all time and did die for it. And it's certainly heretical. Palestine. Please.
Well, normally we have a polylog, and you'll have to take a congregational vote here, but it's already 20 after 11, and so I think there's not time for that today. So I will just end with... What?
I'm ready. You want a polylog? We'll have a polylog.
I say burner.
You will not be the first person who has said that.
And you won't be alone.
So, do you want to have a polylog? I mean, you have to decide this. It's no. Okay. You can just confer among yourselves. So I will finish. I will. Finish this service with just our closing words. Be ye lamps unto yourselves. Be your own confidence. Hold to the truth within yourselves as to the only lamp. Go in peace. Thank you.